Let the record reflect that we now have a quorum. Today is confirmation day in the Judiciary Committee. We have Commissioner Corbell and Commissioner Fabian before us. We will start with Commissioner Corbell. She has to be at another event, so we want to accommodate her. Just for the members' benefit, what I have done is I've asked each of the commissioners to spend about 5 to 10 minutes sharing with us their presentation, and then we will give a little bit of some time, not a little bit, but some time for members to ask questions. The commissioners have agreed to stay as long as they need to respond to questions. So welcome, Commissioner Corbell, to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Velma Corbell. I am the commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Human Rights, and I've been there since January of 2003. I thought I would start by just telling you a little bit about myself and going through some of the things that we've done in the department and some of the things we hope to do over the next 4 years. You should have my resume in front of you. I believe everyone got a copy of that prior to this meeting. So I won't spend a whole lot of time going through the resume since you have had a chance to look at that. I'll be happy to answer questions about the specific information as we move through this. But in terms of things that aren't on the resume that might be of interest to you is that I try to, on a personal note, try to involve myself in activities outside the department that still tend to reflect the work that we do at the department. It's always been a focus of mine, and I sit on a couple of boards where eliminating racism and really building character development are of a key focus for those organizations. The Minneapolis YWCA is one. Their mission is to eliminate racism and empower women. And the YMCA in my own hometown of Andover, Minnesota, brand new YMCA, where we have an opportunity to influence young people to a large extent, and so that's been really an interest of mine. I'm also on the board of the Heritage Achievement Foundation. I was born and raised in East Texas, and there are a group of us from my high school that decided that we had been served well by the schools in our area and got together a few years ago and created a foundation so that we can give back to the community by providing scholarships to young people headed for post-high school education, and so that's been also very rewarding for me to do that. On a personal note, I am a member of Meadow Creek Church in Andover. I'm 46 years old, as I said, born and raised in East Texas, so I am not a Minnesota native, so I don't like days like today. I have been married to my husband, Kip, for 21 years. We have two living children. My oldest is a junior at the University of Minnesota at the Twin Cities campus. He is a biology major, and he plans on being a doctor, he says. And whenever he comes home to raid the refrigerator, I ask him, and he says yes. He still wants to do that, so I'm very pleased with that. And I have a daughter, 16, at Andover High School. So that's about me. Now, the things that we've been doing over the last 4 years at the department, I think, are certainly much more interesting than anything I could say about myself, and I'm very proud to discuss those things a little bit. Many of you were part of a really successful activity that we were involved in 2003, and that was the recodification of the Minnesota Human Rights Act. One of our objectives with that was to make that act readable and accessible by individuals other than attorneys and folks who wanted to have someone else interpret for them what the law said about human rights. And so we were successful in really cleaning up some obsolete language and moving some things around so it's easier for people to read that law. One of the things that we've also done at the department is some minor reorganization in the department to streamline the complaint process, but to also create a small quality control unit in the department so that we could standardize the work that was going through the department. When I first got there, there were pockets of activity in the department where people for the size of the agency were really doing things kind of as they wanted to do them. And so we've been really focusing on standardization and quality control, and we've been doing a good job with that. We have been successful in greater utilization of our alternative dispute resolution mechanism in the department, which certainly provides a better service, in my opinion, to a respondent and charging party because it moves their case through to settlement a lot quicker. But it also decreases the caseload in the department, so it gives us an opportunity to move things through more quickly and more efficiently. We have had the benefit of people in the department who are technocrats, and we have created a technology plan where we have really focused on making solid repair-replace decisions and creating a technology schedule that's going to position the department to be able to utilize, really take advantage of existing technology and move us into the future, which is also one of our strategic goals for the next 4 years. We worked with the University of Minnesota Human Rights Center to create a learning resource toolkit that includes a kindergarten through 12th grade curriculum on human rights and civil rights that's fully downloadable from a website. And we have made that available to every school in the state. And because it's on the website, not only are school districts signing up to receive the information, but we've also had people from outside of Minnesota and outside of the country who have found that information to be very helpful and very usable and user-friendly. Some of the other things in terms of numbers that I think are rather significant is over the last 4 years from January 1st through December 31st of January 1st, 2003 through December 31st of 2006, we handled about 5,000 filed charges, and that is, we have about 25 investigators on staff, and that really is quite a heavy load. We have recovered over $7 million for charging parties in settlement agreements through predetermination settlements, the mediation program, and conciliation conferences after a probable cause determination. We have roughly 1,500 to 1,600 certified contractors on file. Those are companies doing business with the state who have an approved affirmative action plan because they're doing business in large dollar amounts. We have conducted all total around 6,000 compliance reviews of those contractors to make sure that they are following the processes and procedures and policies that they indicated they were going to do when they completed their affirmative action plan. We have conducted about 200 full-scale site audits of businesses around the state of Minnesota who have contracts with the state. And we have estimated that our reach to the communities in Minnesota to be in upwards of millions because we have a website that gets thousands of hits a year. We have community forums, showcases, Human Rights Day. We do a column that we circulate to all the ethnic newspapers. We have done public service announcements. So we have been really trying to extend our reach to the residents in Minnesota. Some of the challenges that I see and the department deals with is really reaching individuals who have the greatest need to have access to the Minnesota Human Rights Act, because we realize that there are the people who come to the department either walk-ins, through the internet, through email. They do so because somehow they already know that we exist and they're comfortable with accessing the services of a government agency. But we do know that there are people in and around the Twin Cities and in greater Minnesota who for whatever reason they're here may be reluctant to access the services of the department. So we will focus in the next years in reaching those individuals who are underserved. Another challenge that I see and the executive team at the department has also been talking with me about is really training and refreshing our staff. This job of an investigator is it's a brain-draining kind of job, and people do burn out. And so we are always looking for ways to make sure that people are not burning out because the turnover cost is so significant to us. And we've been toying with, you know, the idea of doing some cross-training and moving people to some different kinds of things periodically just so that they don't get burnout on the investigation. One of the other challenges that we face a lot in this job is really, you know, apathy and dislike of the Human Rights Act and dislike of this sort of work in general, and really disinterest from individuals and organizations. So we try to approach that by keeping the message fresh and looking for new and different ways to talk about what's in the law in such a way that it's non-threatening and it's not isolating and alienating. And another challenge, of course, is always finding alternative resources, because we realize that that our budgets are not growing, but we still have work that we need to do. So we look for that through foundation grants and partnerships with other organizations who have a similar mission as ours to eliminate discrimination. Our strategic goals, things that I'm very pleased and privileged to be able to have the chance to guide over the next 4 years, is employee development. We want to make sure that our employees are well-trained and that they can deliver their service to the state of Minnesota as well as any other agency, regardless of size or resources. We want to focus on our outreach efforts to residents in Minnesota. And as I said, one of our gap that we know is out there is that underserved population that we really want to try to reach. And then we also want to acquire and implement some new technology that will help us provide a better service to the people that do business with the department, but also so that we have some ability to recover our data in the event of any sort of disaster. And I think, for me, that's really sort of the highlights about what's going on in the department, and I would be happy to address any questions from the committee, Madam Chair.
Any questions from committee members? Commissioner, I've heard from people out in the field that in terms of the recruitment and the composition of your staff, that you make really an affirmative and intentional effort to try to recruit from very diverse populations. And I'm wondering if you could share with us how that has helped you in the work that you do.
Madam Chair, committee members, it has been a deliberate attempt to recruit individuals from the community, particularly those communities where we believe there's a large number of underserved individuals. We have folks on our staff from the Hmong community in both intake and the investigation divisions. We have folk on our Spanish-speaking individuals on our staff in both the intake area and also the our outreach and our investigation divisions. And it is very deliberate because, you know, we realize that there are people who, not everybody speaks English, not everybody has the same level of access to the department, so we need to put people in place to be able to have an entree into those communities, but also to be responsive to people as they access our department for service.
Well, I have to say that I appreciate that. Sometimes, you know, people tend to want to rely on interpreters, and it sounds to me like what you've done is you've tried to recruit professionals for whom the language and the cultural background is an asset to the job that they do and to who they are. And I appreciate that. I think it's fitting that that's coming from your office. I hope that that would get carried through through other agencies in the state. Any further discussions? Senator Betzel?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And, Madam Chair, I remember about 4 years ago when Commissioner Corbell came before the Judiciary Committee, and I met with her at the time and so forth, and I was quite impressed with her background, and we did recommend appointment confirmation at that time. And this is an agency that in years past it had significant problems with case management. They were falling behind, which is why we've mandated that they have to have a status report, and which is part of the packet here. But I will honestly tell you that in the 4 years when I was the chair of this committee, no one raised any concerns about the management or the work of this agency. So I believe that, Commissioner Corbell, you've done quite well, you know, in your job here, and I commend you for it. You know, and if there's no discussion, I would be happy to recommend to the Senate the reappointment of Commissioner Corbell, confirmation.
Senator Foley, did you have a comment?
Only to the extent, Madam Chair, that I support Senator Betzel's nomination or confirmation. I think that's a very appropriate thing to do in this case.
If there's no more discussion, Senator Betzel has moved that we recommend Commissioner Corbell's confirmation to the Senate floor. Yes. Senator Betzel is always my conscience. Are there any members of the audience who would like to speak? Seeing none, Senator Betzel renews his motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, say no. The motion passes. Congratulations, Commissioner Corbell. We will send your recommendation to the floor.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and committee members. I appreciate your encouragement and support.
And next, we will have Commissioner Fabian. If there are any members of the audience who would like to speak on this confirmation, please make yourselves come up. And Regina Garza is standing right here. Please let her know, and she'll get me a note so that we can be prepared for you too. Commissioner Fabian, welcome to the committee. And before we start, let me tell you that we are deeply sorry about Mr. Jensen, and I hope that you will convey our condolences to his young family and the loss that they've suffered, and that if there's anything that, you know, we in this committee or this legislature could do to make sure that, you know, things like this don't happen again, please let us know. But we are deeply sorry for Mr. Jensen's family.
Thank you so much. That really means a lot. It's been a very difficult time, as you can imagine, so we appreciate that. Madam Chair and committee members, I guess seeing as Thelma told a little bit about herself, I'll very briefly, I have been in corrections for 41 years. I've been married to the same wonderful man for 41 years. But he leaves town for about 9 months out of the year, so we get along really, really good. We have two great sons who are married, and I have five grandchildren. I don't know where I'm getting that. My husband is a dog trainer and competes competitively with cutting horses. So we also have 100 herd of cattle at our place. So I'm the indoor one, and so I don't see him too much anyway because he's outside. But so that's kind of a little bit of my background. I started out in the institutions over in Hennepin County as in their juvenile detention center right out of college. And then I immediately came to Ramsey County and worked there for 37 years and kind of worked my way up from a probation officer to the department director. And then 4 years ago, the governor came and asked if I would be willing to serve. And I said no about four times because I heard about all of you up here and how hard it is. So, but I've really been glad. I have to say it's just an absolutely wonderful department, and it was before I came, and I'm sure it will be afterward. But I think one of the good things about confirming me will be that there is some continuity in leadership. I often said, because in Ramsey County, I was there for about 17 years as the director, and would say to all these staff, you know, it's just amazing how they can still function and do a great job when they're, you know, they're, the head of their department turns over every 4 years. So they are remarkable people, and it's really been a privilege to serve with them. As far as accomplishments, I'm really proud of the way my staff and I have maintained public and staff safety in our prisons and field operations during a time of, you know, the worst budget crisis in our state. We addressed and managed huge increases in the prison population. Just in the last 10 years, there's been an 83% increase in our population. And since I came 4 years ago, it's been 19%. I'm also very proud of the credibility I have with the counties and the partnerships that we have. That was one of the reasons that the governor came to me originally, was because he was looking for a more positive and trusting relationship with the counties, because in Minnesota, of course, we really depend on each other as far as providing the services in the state. So I think, you know, that partnership has become a lot better. Early in my tenure, Alfonso Rodriguez murdered Drew Shadeen following his release from prison. Since that time, I'm also very proud of what we have done to make substantial and needed changes in every single area of the delivery of sex offender services at both the state and the local level. We brought in the U.S. Department of Justice Center for Sex Offender Management and did a comprehensive review of every single policy, procedure, and practice that we have in the department. And from that, we have changed dramatically. I really feel we've been fiscally responsible and innovative, effective in managing our resources at a time when, you know, the resources were certainly scarce and our population has gone up. I think it was a major accomplishment and took years off my life, I have to say, to convince the governor, then the finance department, 67 senators, and 134 House members to wisely invest in our bonding, which we got the expansion at Faribault, which would bring on another over 1,000 beds at that facility. And those of you who went out to Stillwater could see how badly we needed that new segregation unit. And we are doubling the challenge incarceration program, which is really very, very promising in terms of treating meth addiction, as well as putting a 92-bed expansion at Shakopee. And that was certainly difficult in a time of, minimal resources. I think as far as the future direction that I'm looking at, the prison capacity is projected to continue to grow by between 250 and 300 offenders per year, which equates to about a prison every 4 years. We're going to continue to responsibly plan both short-term and long-term for appropriate prison facilities. We're making one of the major efforts that we started 18 months ago, really started full bore, is the statewide reentry initiative. And our intent is to make it the most comprehensive and successful in the county and really look at reducing recidivism even more in our state. We're also going to continue our efforts to provide for more and better treatment in the prisons as far as CD and mental health services. Within the next 10 years, about 1,400 Department of Corrections employees will be eligible for retire, and 800 will be eligible for retirement in the next 5 years. And a major initiative in our department is to develop a succession and leadership project so that people are ready to step into the leadership spots in our department and in other state agencies. Prior to my coming, the NAACP had settled a lawsuit with the department, and as part of the lawsuit, we were asked to have a task force that was comprised of members appointed by the NAACP and also by the department. And I participated very closely in that for the last 4 years. And we feel we have developed a very good, workable plan over the next years to not only retain the employees of color that we have, but to add many more to the department in our hiring, in our recruitment, in our promoting, and in different policies. And Nathaniel Kalik and I have worked very closely to develop these strategies, and we're looking, and we have looked, and will continue to look at all areas, you know, just what kinds of things would make people feel not included, what our policies are in promoting when we change a job or list a job, are is it the same responsibilities and criteria, you know, for everybody? So we've looked. It's taken us 4 years, and we do have a on our website. We have all of the recommendations and what our work plan is, and we're on target to achieve all of those. The other thing that I just want to mention is that 3 years ago I brought the three delivery systems together, and what we are looking at is, and what we did was start a evidence-based practices policy council, and it was comprised of the leaders of all three delivery systems. And basically, we're combining resources and looking at trying to make sure that correctional best practices are implemented throughout the state in a consistent way. What we're trying to do is maximize the resources at both the state level and at the county level. And we have had a number of training sessions together. We've brought in people. We've also been talking with the court system about them saying to county staff, you know, what about a case plan? What about an assessment? You know, to make sure that everybody gets on board with it. I've spent my time so far telling you about accomplishments and highlights, and I guess during the past 4 years there certainly have been some lowlights as well, mistakes. I think in a department of over 4,000 employees and 9,000 inmates and thousands of people under supervision in the community, that there are times when we're going to make mistakes, we're going to make wrong judgments. I think I'm a strong believer in accountability, in learning from mistakes, in correcting them immediately, and not to make that same mistake again. I guess one example is in July of 06, the legislative auditor found that our MnCorps unit, which is our correctional industry program, that they had engaged in several business practices that were not that were contrary to state law. We took corrective action and are in the process of bringing some legislation to you to approve, which will go a long way in making sure that that doesn't happen again. And I think at that point you probably have some questions, and I'll stop.
Okay. Questions from members? Senator Betzel.
Thank you. Commissioner, there was one issue that you alluded to that I had a bit of a concern about. You mentioned Alfonso Rodriguez, and of course what happened there was that he was screened, determined not to be a candidate for civil commitment, and upon his release, then ultimately has now been convicted of the murder of Ms. Shadeen. I think that the reaction, though, and I don't know whether it was just from the administration overall or from corrections or whatever, was that instead of having corrections do the screening, to just shift that responsibility to the counties and the county attorneys. And my concern is that, first of all, instead of having one set of standards, we now may have 87 different standards, depending on what the county attorneys want to do, and that the there's been definitely an increase in civil commitments of the sex offenders coming out of the Department of Corrections. In my other life, I'm a civil commitment defense attorney, although I do not handle the commitment cases simply because I was the author of the law to streamline and change civil commitment proceedings of sex offenders. But I just want to express a concern that I've heard in dealing with both defense attorneys and county attorneys, that this has been quite a bit of a burden by having that shift coming upon them. And my sense was that a bit of an overreaction from the executive branch in doing so. I just wonder if you could comment on that.
Certainly, Madam Chair. We did originally feel that, you know, the county attorney should accept that because what, you know, it is their responsibility to see if the case is, if there's enough there and take it to, you know, a judge and have a hearing, and then the judge decides if they should be civilly committed. The legislature did not agree with that. We still have that responsibility, and we've made many, many changes in the process since then. One of the things that had happened with our civil commitments was that we really evolved into, and this is, you know, long before the Rodriguez incident, but we had really evolved into referring cases to them that we thought would meet their high criteria for who they would take. So many offenders, you know, that would have been referred were not, because we did not think it was possible to get those referred. After the Rodriguez case, we reexamined everything. We brought on a legal screen. We had thought that the Attorney General could work with us. And, you know, part of it is we're not lawyers. And we do look at the psychological parts of it. We do look at all the areas. But we thought that the Attorney General could do that. He didn't want to do that. So the legislature funded a legal screen for us, which is a retired judge. And it's Judge Bert Peritsky, who was very knowledgeable about civil commitments. So at this point, we do all of the referrals, and the county attorneys don't do that. And it is true that the numbers have increased as to how many we refer, but we consider those, not only our staff, but with our legal screen, to be very dangerous people. We think the county attorney needs to, we go through the process, we refer it to them. It's their judgment then as to whether they want to continue and take it to a trial before a judge.
Thank you.
Senator Scheid.
Yes, Madam Chair. I was just struck by the 4,000 employees and 9,000 inmates. I just didn't know that. Maybe everybody else sitting at the table knew that that's how high that. Can you break that down for me a little bit about employees? I mean, it just seems like it's really high considering 9,000 inmates. But
the inmates are all 24/7.
Well, I understand. Okay, well, see, she's going to explain that to me.
I am. Madam Chair, Senator. Actually, you know, about half of those employees, or a little more than half, are in the – no, it's 2,200 of them are correctional officers. We have 10 facilities. We have to run them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So in most agencies, you know, there's only, you know, the one person that has to do that, but there's five, you know, for one, because we have the shifts, different shifts three times a day, a change. So that adds many, many employees. In addition to the correctional officers, we do provide many programs. There's teachers, there's medical staff. There's you know, treatment people, a lot of other things, right? So that's part of it. In addition, in 55 counties, we provide supervision for all felonies, and the Community Corrections Act counties, and there's how many? 32. There's 32 jurisdictions that are community corrections, so the county provides all of those services. But in the smaller counties, the Department of Corrections provides all felony supervision. In 27 counties, we also provide all juvenile supervision as well as misdemeanor. So that's a big chunk. Then in addition, we do all the jails. We have to do the jail as far as licensing and inspecting jails. We do all out-of-home placements that we have to look at. We have to have staff that we get sued, I'd say, you know, six or seven times a week on frivolous suits from some offenders. Some offenders, it's legitimate. Look up there at the attorney. And so we do, you know, we do deal with that as well. So there's just really a number of areas that we do all grants. We do, what am I missing? Anything?
Okay. Madam Chair,
Senator Shy.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, thank you. No, I am somewhat naive to the criminal justice system. I understand we have inmates that are there 24/7, 365, whatever you say after that. But that it really brings it home as to why it's so expensive, why it is so expensive. My theory is kind of that when society fails and when people fail in society, it's kind of a mutual failure as far as I'm concerned. That's dramatic, and I thank you for that.
Senator Shide, you may be new to the committee in this area, but you are not naive. Commissioner, I wonder if you could give us a little bit of an update on during the interim, there were a number of things that happened. I'm wondering if you would be, or if you can, give us an update on what the status is with respect to Mr. Larry Williams and the lawsuit from MAPE.
Yes, Madam Chair. Mr. Williams was one of several employees in MNCOR that had been laid off. One of the things I should just start with this is MNCOR is our prison industry, and for many, many years we got a state subsidy to run the MNCOR industry, as most states do. About 10 years ago or 6 years ago, the legislature said, you're not going to get this $6 million anymore. You have to run MNCOR like a business and become self-sufficient. So in the last 6 years, we finally did that in 2003. So no money, state money, goes into MNCOR. Part of that, though, is running it like a business. So before, we would have laundries in a number of prisons, and so it was to give them skills, keep them busy. We can't have industries that don't make money, basically, because we have to pay for our staff and to provide this. So sales is a huge deal. We need to have people go out and market it. We right now partner with over 66 private entities in the community. We have to be diverse in what we do so that we don't take away business from other businesses. We have to just do little bits of things here and there. So one of the things that we did was restructure MNCOR, and as part of that, Mr. Williams was not terminated, as he said. He was laid off, and we worked with him to find him another position. He's currently working as a correctional officer. Right now, there is a lawsuit pending that he and his union have initiated, so that's as much information as I can give.
Any questions on that matter from the members? Then, Commissioner, I'm wondering if you could also then give us an update on where the status is with respect to the former chaplain at Shakopee, Ms. Christine Holmgren.
Yes, I certainly can. She was served at Shakopee as a chaplain in an unclassified position for almost 6 months. So she'd only been with the department that long. There had been initiative to take all the chaplains statewide. There's some in our agencies, there's some in Human Services, and I think Veterans may have one. But it was not a DOC initiative, but someone brought an initiative to have the chaplains all in classified positions instead of unclassified. So that was done. And Dewar, our State Department of Human Resources, had sent us in writing that we had to put all of them in classified positions, except we couldn't put her in a classified position because she hadn't been with the state for a year. And that is for almost every single, when they change those, that has been the policy in Duer. So what we did was put her on notice that she could compete for her job, but we needed to post it because this was not a job that, because she hadn't been in for 6 months. She became very upset about that, and the next thing I know on the front page or middle page of the paper was that we fired her because she opposed the IFI program, which is a Christian-based program that is in Lionel Lakes Prison. We had decided because the results were so well that we would have a small program at Shakopee so that there was a equity between women and men in order to access a program like this. She said the governor personally said she needed to be fired. I can guarantee you that the governor found out about her in the paper. He had never talked to me or any other staff about this woman. She then applied for the job, and we did not give it to her, and we sent her a letter with the written reasons why she did not get that job. And because of data privacy, I can't give you the letter, but she could give a release for it if you wanted to know why she wasn't rehired.
Any follow-up questions on this matter? Finally, Commissioner, one last question for me is, over the summer there were some concerns about in Sherburne County with respect to the area the prisoner who allegedly killed one of the individuals that was in jail with him in Sherburne County, in the Sherburne County Jail. I understand that the department has taken some corrective actions, and I wonder if you could update us on that.
Okay. Yes, Madam Chair. Actually, the incident, for those who aren't aware of it, we had this offender at St. Cloud, which is in Sherburne County, and he attacked another inmate with a razor blade and severely cut him. We moved this inmate then to Oak Park Heights, which is our highest security prison, and he was held there. Sherburne County did an investigation into it. They signed a complaint that outlined what this offender did at the St. Cloud facility. Sherburne County then, because the offense occurred in Sherburne County, they hold the hearings in Sherburne County. So the court in Sherburne County issued what's called a writ, and it's a court order to allow their deputies to go to Oak Park Heights and take the offender out of there and bring him to Sherburne County Jail to wait for his hearing date. They did that and came and got the offender. They brought him back to Sherburne County Jail. While he was in Sherburne County Jail, he assaulted and beat this man to death at the Sherburne County Jail. There was some talk about we didn't tell them how dangerous he was. And what what has happened since then was that I asked for a meeting with the Sheriff's Association. Together we sat down and said, when you're picking up somebody, because it happens very regularly that counties come to our prisons to writ out somebody for temporarily for the hearing. So what we did was sit down and decide among us what things they wanted and what things we could provide to them when they come and pick up an offender. But, in this case, I don't believe that the department acted irresponsibly at all. The deputy coming up there on the writ, the paperwork that he had, it said, that this guy was charged with second-degree assault with a dangerous weapon. And then if you look at the complaint, it starts out, I am a Sherburne County deputy, and so he talks in there about the fact that this guy sliced somebody with a razor blade and severely hurt him. So, you know, we certainly feel that every law enforcement group knows that Oak Park Heights is our most secure facility. They're not picking up anybody who's not dangerous. So that's that incident.
Thank you for the updates. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, on this point on Sherburne County and the death that occurred, I'm more familiar with how Hennepin County's Sheriff's Department works. Deputy sheriffs work in handling jail prisoners and then transferring prisoners from court to a workhouse or to correction facilities. Tell me, are most, if not all, deputy sheriffs have some experience working in their respective jails or in prisoner transfer before they get into regular law enforcement duties, or is maybe the more rural areas more law enforcement oriented and not so much jailhouse oriented?
Commissioner Fabian.
Chair, Senator, you know, it really is a mix, and it's really much the officers really like the patrol duty better than the detention duty. And I know in Ramsey County that became a big area. And now, you know, to make it fair, they're trying to give both experience. But in the smaller agencies, they certainly end up doing both. But it really does differ by jurisdictions.
Madam Chair,
Senator Limmer.
In Sherburne County where this occurred, was that particular deputy, had he had experience
Commissioner.
Dealing with prisoners in a prison setting as opposed to a law enforcement? Of law enforcement role?
Madam Chair, Fabian. Senator, I don't know that.
Okay.
Are there any further questions for Commissioner Fabian?
Madam Chair,
Senator Limmer.
I'd like to move the appointment of reappointment of Commissioner Fabian.
Senator Limmer has moved that Commissioner Fabian's reappointment as commissioner of the department as commissioner to the Department of Corrections be recommended to Bass and sent to the floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Motion passes. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I forgot to ask for public input.
Huh?
Public input, but okay. Public.
Oh. I forgot to ask for input from the public. Is there anybody from the public? Because we could re-vote if there are any members in the public who would like to testify. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Betzel. Members, we we're not going to have a meeting this Thursday. On Friday, there's going to be a joint field trip to visit the Challenge Incarceration Program. The staff and I will be planning our meetings for the month of February. We've been waiting for bills to accumulate. If you have a bill that's coming directly to us, do send us a request for a hearing. If you have a bill that needs to come through us from another committee, I would ask you talk to those committee chairs to have your bill scheduled for a hearing so it will come to us. But we will be having almost all of our meetings in February, and in fact plan to be here the entire time, because I think that February is going to be the bulk of our meeting times. If you are not going to be in the committee, please let us know so that we're not waiting for members to show up. We will be starting meetings promptly. And again, if you have amendments to bills, please let Ms. Pontius and Mr. Backus know early. They have another meeting, another committee before ours, and so we like to be able to have them be able to do their work rationally in a reasonable amount of time. If there are no further discussion, Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, do we have any idea of when the first deadline would be? Has that been posted yet?
I'm not aware, but Senator Limmer, we will talk with leadership and to get some idea, and then we'll let you know. All right. Well, if there's no further discussions or questions, the Judiciary Committee stands adjourned.